We need to update the layoff situation as the spring and summer of COVID moves toward fall. I'm David Brancaccio. I want to lead with this through-the-looking-glass economy, where news that just under a million people signed up for unemployment benefits in a week might be considered an improvement. The figure today is 963,000 more people signed up after layoffs. Diane Swonk, chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton, always keeps a close eye on what big numbers like this mean for actual people. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
It's a strange world we live in when we take heart in merely about a million people having to sign up for unemployment benefits after a layoff.
Exactly. We've been seeing these numbers for more than 20 weeks shoot above a million each week with initial unemployment claims. And it's stunning that they're still as high as they are, slipping just below a million on those initial unemployment claims. If you roll in also the special pandemic expansion for gig workers and self-employed, that's another 400,000 plus in this most recent week. And that's below 500,000 for the first time in a while. And to think that those are improvements, they are. They're lower than they were, but we still are feeling the pain, and many families are still feeling the pain.
All this is among reasons that people are so focused on whether or not Congress and the White House can actually work out some new coronavirus relief package. There doesn't seem to be too much movement right now.
Exactly. And, you know, we're still talking about just under 30 million people that are still getting paid unemployment insurance as well when you combine all these groups together. And they just lost $600 a week in extra supplemental benefits. That means they can't pay for food, they can't pay for shelter, and they're running out of money to pay for, you know, basic of anything, no bills, no nothing. It really is a catastrophic event.
Diane Swonk, she's an economist, in fact, the chief one at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're following the news yesterday that New York is suing a big producer of eggs for allegedly quadrupling prices during this COVID emergency. Hillendale Farms denies this and says it's working to make sure its eggs remain on store shelves. What is price gouging versus what an economist might see as proper distribution of a scarce resource? Marketplace's Jasmine Garst cracks the case.
In a free market society, you can raise the price on your products. But law professor Omri Ben-Shahar from the University of Chicago says once a state of emergency is declared, raising it too much could be considered price gouging.
The price cannot rise to a level that is, we sometimes call it, unconscionable.
And in an emergency like a hurricane, an earthquake, or a pandemic, price increases that might be okay under other circumstances raise questions. Professor Andrew Novakovic is an economist at Cornell University.
And so that starts to feel a little bit more like, you know, taking advantage of somebody when they're down.
In a lot of states, anti-gouging laws reference essential goods, which in many states means fuel, medicine, and food. Charging a lot more for those during an emergency, that's illegal. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
You likely have followed the college admissions scandal with 20 parents so far convicted of bribing their kids onto fancy campuses. It turns out that investigation was triggered by a Los Angeles businessman who was involved but spilled the beans when accused of a separate securities fraud case. Maury Tobin yesterday was sentenced to a year in prison for involvement in what's called a pump-and-dump stock scheme. The judge suggested he might have gotten 8 years if he wasn't so helpful with the big college admissions tip. We have parents, students, teachers, and school administrators across the country worried about how to safely pull off this new school term and still get people educated. A new study this morning from Bankrate suggests people are not just worried about the quality of education and the scheduling, but what online or partial online learning will do to their finances and careers. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab is here.
Well, there are a lot of costs that come with school from home. Parents can't depend on school lunches and special learning programs. And of course, there's the technology upgrade for households that don't have the internet or need a better connection. Plus, families with multiple kids need multiple devices.
Right. And many parents who are asked to work from home but also feel they have to lend time and energy to their child's online learning, that's a lot.
Yeah, the study shows parents are worried they're missing out on career growth. And part of that has to do with time, with respondents saying they'll have to work fewer hours. Even more alarming, 15% of parents say they may have to stop working altogether.
And the burdens among families are not equal.
Of course, like everything else in this pandemic, the financial burden of online learning is not equal. Ted Rossman, an analyst at Bankrate, says millennial parents feel they'll be affected the most.
They're the most likely to have younger kids. And I think that that poses a whole other set of challenges with remote learning and with childcare and just making it all work.
It doesn't help that millennials in general have little financial stability. They're less likely to own homes and more likely to have student loan debt. And those things add to the daily stresses and finances of getting through this pandemic.
Marketplace's Kristen Schwab, thank you. The average Black woman had to work more than 19 months to make the same money as the average white man made in 12. Today, August 13th, is being marked as Black Women's Equal Pay Day. It's the calculation that Black women had to work 7.5 months into 2020 here to make up for what they were not paid in 2019. Marketplace's Erica Barris reports.
The reason Black Women's Equal Pay Day is so late in the year is because a Black woman before the pandemic made 62 cents for every dollar a white man made. But this is the age of COVID. Beth Humbert, a business professor at UMass Lowell, says,
in times of crisis, we definitely see that existing patterns of inequality become more pronounced.
During the pandemic, industries where women tend to work are being hit harder. And Black women have been hit hardest by job losses. The unemployment rate among them is 13.5%. That's higher than the overall rate. COVID is making lack of childcare a bigger problem, too. In many cases, says Wharton professor Stephanie Creary, Black women are the primary caregiver and breadwinner. That used to mean they relied on networks of friends and family to care for their children.
Now that we're in a physical distancing situation, the support system that Black women might normally get, that's gone away for many people.
That may force some women to leave the workforce. Basu Reddy with the National Partnership for Women and Families says that could make a long-term problem worse. Black women are already concentrated in low-paying industries, and coming in and out of the workforce can make it harder for them to negotiate pay.
If your previous salary is used to determine your new salary, then that carries with you, that discrimination and that inequality carries with you into your new job.
In the last couple months, lots of companies have said that Black lives matter. Reddy says companies wanting to show they mean that should pay their Black workers equitably. But workers can push their employers too, says Minda Hartz, author of the memo, What Women of Color Need to Know to Secure a Seat at the Table. They can say,
well, as a company, you said Black lives matter. And so the Black lives inside of your company have to matter as well. And that starts with pay, right?
And even in this economic climate, she says, those steps may chip away at the pay gap. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
And we've been covering the downfall of the German digital payments company Wirecard, which abruptly went bust in June amid evidence somebody faked more than $2 billion on its books. The CEO was brought in early on, but Wirecard's chief operating officer, Jan Marsalek, remains on the lam. Today, German investigators appealed to the public for info on the CEO's whereabouts. They got a wanted poster circulating now. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.